Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Time, hour three here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Monday, June 8th, 2026 edition. Hope you had a great weekend. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Jay Hamm with you, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, you can check them out at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Already 79 degrees. The real feel, the feel-like temperature right now is 91. Ouch! Mostly cloudy, humid. Couple of showers, heavy thunderstorms possible. When that humidity rises, there's always the chance of rain. And then later this week, it gets warmer. 93 tomorrow, 92 Wednesday, 94 Thursday. Again, that's just the regular temperature, not the feel-like temperature. So be careful out there. Make sure you're hydrating and all that stuff as summer has come a little bit early here to Memphis. We can take your calls and texts on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. Got a couple of things I want to get to before we dive back into the NBA Finals and the NBA Draft. Mentioned earlier with the Memphis Sports Fact, the Memphis Hound Dogs won their inaugural home game. Arena team playing in Memphis, 50-18. Memphis Football Club, soccer team, they tied Hattiesburg on the road 3-3, so they now have a win, two draws, and two losses. Also, the World Cup begins later this week. Our buddy Lawrence Dockery will be joining us on Wednesdays during the World Cup to break everything down. The United States team, this is men's, by the way, the United States team lost to Germany over the weekend in a friendly 2-1. I know you love the friendlies, Eli.
I prefer the unfriendly.
But that's a good performance. Even though it's a loss, it's a good performance against one of the better squads there is in the world. Germany 2-1. Game one for the United States is coming up on June 12th. So that is what, Friday? Friday, June 12th, they will take on Paraguay. We'll find out all about them when Lawrence joins us on Wednesday. Okay, so my question to you guys is this. We're watching the Knicks on a unbelievable run, 13 straight playoff wins. If they go on to sweep, that'll be 15 straight. We've already looked at them as one of the best streaks in postseason history, be one of the best teams, to be honest with you, in postseason history. But is that kind of a downer for the finals? Like, if we get a four love sweep, do we look at it and go, hey, the Knicks, man, this is great watching this historic run? Or do we look at it and go, my gosh, there was no intrigue?
It is what it is. If it was their time and it was their time to be that dominant and they ran through it, they just ran through it. I can't really get into – I get the other side of, you know, you would like to have more intrigue and more, because we were talking with someone last week who said that last year's finals to him was boring. Thunder and Pacers. I'm like, really? That battle games, yeah. You know, through seven games? But you found that boring because the teams that were there weren't intriguing to you.
Right.
And this one, this is the biggest, this is New York.
I am never, I want to put this. I don't care who's in a championship.
Right.
I don't care if it's the smallest market, the largest market. I am never swayed by the teams that are in the final.
It would be a disappointment to see this Spurs team, as young as they are, pull through the things that they got through and get here and then ultimately get swept. Yeah. But I also know we'll see them in this position again coming down the road. I'm pretty confident about that.
Yeah, I mean, from my – because when you don't care who wins and you're just trying to see a fun series, a sweep is – now, if we get two more great games – and it ends in four, but I've seen great games. If the Knicks beat them by 20 in the next two games, I'm like, well, that sucks. This finals didn't give me anything. It gave me a couple of good games, and then it's over. But yeah, when you don't have a dog in the fight, I'm just looking for good basketball. I want good games and preferably a long series, but it could be a sweep. If you get four great games and it's a sweep, I'm like, okay, hey, at least I got to see a real good game. I mean, that game the other night was fantastic. Like, it's fun to watch a game come down literally to the final shot. Like, and yes, the Spurs screwed it up and gave it away, all these things. But they were the ones that, hell, they had to make the 14-0 run to even get into that spot. It looked like it may not be a good game. They might get blown out. So I'm here to see good games and as many of them as possible. But just if it goes four, I'm not going to be like, oh, that was a horrendous series.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Obviously, they could be up 2-0. They had the double-digit lead in game one. They lost that lead. Give the Knicks a lot of credit. They lost that lead, though, the Spurs, in game two. Yes, they could have gotten blown out. They were down 14, as Eli said. They run off 14 straight. They tie the game. And that one goes down to the wire where, again, they probably should have won the game. They make a critical mistake, a bad turnover, a foul, and then Wembanyama gets a shot where he knocks that down a lot of time. I'm not going to say the majority, but he knocks it down a lot of the times, wasn't able to come through. And they're down 0-2, but it's not like they've been blown out. They are competitive games. So I think you're right. I think the intrigue is within the fact that these games so far have been great. If the Knicks had won by 20 both games, and now we're looking at and talking about a sweep, then it would lose some of its luster, I think. But it hasn't lost the luster. Because I still think the Spurs, I don't think the Spurs can win the series now. I don't think so. But I do believe that they can make it interesting. But they better win game three tonight, which we know it's going to be hard. If they lose tonight and get handled, it's going to be hard for them to come back in game four. It might be a sweep. It might be a sweep. Maybe it'll be a gentleman's sweep. But tonight, against all the factors going against them, you could have won two, you're down two. You have to go to New York. Rabbit fans, the president, the whole craziness. When you walk off your bus, those fans are out there in droves waiting for them. And you're young. You're still very, very young. You got seasoned guys on this Knicks team. You don't on this San Antonio team. So there's a lot of factors going against them.
Got a text on the Sissy's Log Cabin listed line at 360-8255, 360-8255. Key says, if the Spurs are lucky enough to make it to a Western Conference Finals again, I bet you if they win, they walk off the court like nothing happened and get ready for the finals. We talked about that after that series. Just the reaction, you could tell how much they put into beating Oklahoma City. And we wondered, can they kind of reset? Now, we don't have any idea what, if this is the result of fatigue, whatever. We don't know any of that stuff. But we know just Wembanyama, everybody, how much it meant to them to beat Oklahoma City and just get to this point. Whether that's affecting them, I don't know. We'll never
know. Wait, you're saying you think they're satisfied with just beating Oklahoma City? No way.
No,
they just poured everything into it. They just have nothing left.
Yeah, physically they may have run out of gas, but certainly they're not
mentally
happy. They're not happy being in the finals.
And resetting after coming down off of that high to get prepared for the finals was the challenge for them.
Yeah.
More so than anything.
But they had a double-digit lead in game one. They turned around coming off that emotional win over Oklahoma City and blew it.
Double-digit leads in this league.
Let me rephrase. They played extremely well in game one. They didn't look like they were a tired team that just beat Oklahoma City.
I tell John Harden this all the time. The NBA game in itself is a marathon within a marathon. It has its spurts, its runs, and its times, and it's just can have that double-digit lead.
Like people always say, it's a game of runs. It is. It literally is. You just know runs are coming both ways.
I know, but these are still mostly 20-year-old guys. I mean,
that's why they're coming that way because
I think it's become too much dependence on Wembanyama. Become too dependent on Wembanyama.
This is a team that's in the finals on their first roll.
I know it's incredible, but I'm saying right now against the Knicks, we brought up earlier in the show, whoever brought up the Keldon Johnson thing. Yeah. Keldon Johnson was sixth man of the year, and he's a non-factor. I throw it in there that the dependence on Wembanyama is crazy. It's got to take its toll on him physically and mentally.
It is.
I mean, they bring in the kid they got from Boston, Cornette, and he's done nothing.
Well, that's kind of with a microcosm of that fourth quarter for Wemby because he was slow early. Then he finally got it, picked it up, and started getting it going.
Yeah.
And then he had to pick his team up again to get them back fired up to make the 14-0 run to be in that position at the end.
Do you think
again? I mean, that pass, like that. I mean, there's just a
that's mental.
Mental fatigue. Yeah. Like you're just like it's just things aren't processing correctly.
I know this is impossible to answer. I'll still ask it. If this was officiated by regular season standards, would the Spurs be up 2-0?
I don't think it matter.
The physicality that they're letting them play with?
Because the physicality is the Knicks are still playing basketball. They're still doing the basketball requisites, and they're not beating themselves.
Even with Brunson struggling shooting?
Yeah, they're not beating themselves.
Okay.
And even with that, he's doing a great job defensively, and Mike Brown is doing a great job of not allowing Jalen Brunson to get hurt when they're doing this game.
I give him all the credit in the world. I still think that the Spurs would have at least a win in this series.
They should have a win.
But likely. I like that they let him play. I don't want to have all these whistles. Yeah. I like the physicality. I mean, you know, I give Wembanyama a lot of credit, man. He hasn't been back down from anybody. But
they just match up well with the Spurs.
Yes.
The Spurs, you know?
Exactly right. Absolutely.
Well, again, as Adam Zagoria talked about, like, the changing of Cat's image amongst, especially Knicks, but even just really NBA fans overall.
The perception,
like, has been, this is incredible. Because his whole thing was, and part of the Knicks' problem, perceived problem, was that their two best offensive guys were defensive liabilities. And so it's hard, like, when they rely on defense, but you've got your two best guys who you have to have on the floor, they are defensive liabilities. Well, Cat has done a fantastic job against Wembanyama, playing him the way he needs to. And so, and like, again, that's been Cat's thing. Like, yeah, he's the self-proclaimed greatest big man shooter of all time, and he is, really. But, you know, all these things. But people are like, he couldn't play defense, and he'd never really done anything of true consequence. Well, he is completely erasing that right now. And if he ends up being a finals MVP, which, again, I don't think they'll ever give it to him unless he goes crazy and Brunson has, like, two more terrible games. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's hard to win over New York fans. Once they have an opinion of you, that's why I'd ask him. And Alex Rodriguez is probably a pretty decent one because he always struggled in the World Series and they always got mad because he didn't. But like, it's not easy to win over New York fans once they have their opinion on you. And for Carl Anthony Towns to do this is pretty incredible.
Well, the only other person that's image would completely change in the eyes of the fans of the Knicks, in my opinion, is what I brought up with Zagoria, and that's James Dolan, the owner. Now it's like, all right, he may be a jerk, but he's putting money every year into this organization. He's not afraid to spend or go into the tax. So I think his image cleans up a little bit, but Carl Anthony Towns, because there were people, I think, that started to question, I'm talking about earlier in the season, maybe last year, like, was that a good trade with Julius Randle in Minnesota? Was that a good trade?
And a lot of that backlash is still fading from the perception that Jimmy Butler put out there about him when they were teammates in Minnesota, and a lot of people still carry that perception of Cat. But it's like, he's a double-double machine on a nightly basis
right.
Wherever team that he's been on. And then now I look at his numbers in these playoffs. It's like his scoring is down, his rebound is down a touch, but he's much more efficient on the offensive end. And defensively, you see his numbers being also reflective there and as well as on the game film too. So it's just like it's one of those things where he's making this point like, y'all must have forgot who I really am as a player, and this is who I am. And he's hungry. He got to remember, he's a Jersey kid, so he grew up rooting for the Knicks. So this is like home for him, and he's taking every opportunity to just go at it.
Well said. Well said.
Another text that says, nobody likes Dolan no matter what happens. I'm a huge Knicks fan. I know plenty in New York. Nobody likes Dolan no matter what. He's helped destroy the Rangers as well.
No, and that texter is absolutely right. But I'm going off what Zagoria said, and he is a native New Yorker as well who covers them and all that. And he said the image would be a little bit better with a dub that people would. No.
Well, I mean, a championship helps anybody.
That's what I'm saying. That's all he said. So I'm saying right after, because there's no other image that needs to be cleaned up other than, again, Carl Anthony Towns, more of the basketball image, not the personality or the person. Dolan is the person. Other than that, I don't see who else like benefits a lot other than, hey, man, we got a chip and we got a ring on that team. I'm trying to think, is there anybody else who's like kind of in a doghouse type guy? I don't believe so. But how about the whole thing we talked about with Leon Rose? Worldwide West.
Oh, yeah.
I used to travel with the Memphis Tigers on a bus to get to a hotel or to go to the airport, and Worldwide West is on the bus. I'm sure it was against NCAA. He's on the bus handing the phone with Michael Jordan over to Derrick Rose or to somebody else. I mean, I'm on the bus with these guys. I'm right next to them watching this happen.
First of all, that's probably why we're not allowed to hang that banner down the page.
They won't be able to take the Knicks banner down if they win, though.
No.
All is fair in love and war.
Just that influence, and like you said, with Leon Rose, in spite of their owner being James Dolan, they're able to get this done.
Right. But I remember, though, who is this guy? And these are them. That's World Wide West.
Super Connect.
Damn, like World Wide. And that was years ago. Think about it. That was 20-something years ago.
Maybe a championship can somehow get Charles Oakley and James Dolan to patch
never,
up their relationship.
Never.
I don't. It's not.
Especially now that he's not going to any of the games.
If it hasn't happened now.
Because it's never going to happen.
He's still mad at Patrick Ewing. I don't know why, but Charles
Oakley is?
He's still going at Patrick. Like, why are you keep going at Patrick?
Well, who was trying to get him back together here recently? It wasn't Patrick. Was it Patrick?
It may have been Patrick. I know Patrick was in Cleveland, and the deal was that he stopped by Oakley's mom's house, but he didn't talk to Oakley. So Oakley's a little bit upset about that.
Wow, man. Get over it, right? Let it go. This is your chance. You could be invited to watch Game 3 and 4 at the Garden.
If John Starks is allowed in the Garden after going 2 for 18 in Game 7.
After pulling a James Harden. The Reggie texted him, by the way, we were talking about the tickets. He said, give them up, take the money, and watch on TV.
I think that would probably be the majority of people. But, again, it's not unfair to question the fandom of that person. I'm not saying that I agree with that. But are you a diehard fan if you give up the tickets? And who knows if an opponent
diehard fans could be entrepreneurs, too.
They're just taking advantage of the situation. But there's nothing wrong with that. As long as it's legal.
They sell the tickets and use the ticket funds to go buy more gear.
Yeah, right. I'm never going to have a problem with whatever. If you've spent a lot of money through the years on Knicks tickets and finally you got an opportunity to make a bunch off of them,
I'm not saying I wouldn't do it because I've never been in that situation, never will be in that situation. But I would think right now that I would go to the game. But who knows?
I wonder if Whoopi Goldberg is going to the game, considering that they made a movie about her 30 years ago, being the head coach of the Knicks, bringing them out of, just straight disparity.
Well, here's the thing. Whoopi's probably down on the list because you know how many people are trying to get into that game that are celebrities, are so-called New York fans? There's only... what, 18,000 something seats?
I mean, but that's Eddie. You should let Eddie in.
Eddie should get in. I understand. I don't know if she's going to be able to get in.
Just let her coach. Well, if they get up 3-0, let her coach game 4. You know you're going to win this series. Let her coach. Let Eddie coach game 4.
I mean, as long as she keep Rick Bronson on staff, they're cool with that.
Then again, I thought Whoopi once was in there as a player. She went by the name Ronaldo Balkman. Wasn't that the guy's name? What was the guy's name?
Oh, yeah, that's Ronaldo Balkman, yeah.
That's
the
one.
They booed him relentlessly on draft night when they selected him. I never forget that.
Corgi's Ribs and Barbecue, great option today for lunch, for dinner. When you're thinking about lunch or dinner, think Corgi's. 40 years plus in existence, and they've been catering that entire time as well. You have an event coming up this summer, this fall. You want it catered. Think Corgi's. They can start you out as low as $7.99 per person. They'll set it up. They'll tear it down. And you can enjoy that delicious slow-smoke barbecue. The queue, the ribs, the barbecue nachos. Start yourself off with that cheese and sausage plate. They also have an award-winning catfish plate, tamales, burgers, desserts, just amazing salads as well. They have it all for you at Corky's. When you head over for lunch or dinner, you get add a third of a rack of ribs for just $7.99 when you purchase your entree. Party packs start at just $7.99. And if you want them to deliver, they can deliver to your home or office. Set price $3.99, $3.99. Let Corky's deliver to your home or office. If you're heading out to their restaurants, you got four choices in the Memphis area. They have other Corky's, but the four in the Memphis area, Poplar Avenue in Memphis, Poplar Avenue in Collierville, Germantown Parkway in Cordova, and Goodman Road in Olive Branch. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. More of the draft rumors when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Not only can you listen to your favorite shows on Sports 56, you can also watch video of the shows live on Twitter and YouTube. Watch and listen every day
at Sports 56 WHBQ. Tito's Handmade Vodka is America's favorite vodka for a reason. From the first legal distillery in Texas, Tito's is six times distilled till it's just right and naturally gluten-free, making it a high-quality spirit that mixes with just about anything, from the smoothest martinis to the best Bloody Marys. Tito's is known for giving back, teaming up with nonprofits to serve its communities and do good for dogs. Make your next cocktail with Tito's. Distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Incorporated, Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly.
Napa Cafe celebrates 28 years in 2026.
Hi, I'm Glenda Hastings, owner of Napa Cafe, and I want to thank you for making us part of your dining experiences. If you are a first-time guest or have dined with us countless times, I want to thank you for making us part of your lives. Whether you're celebrating with the crowd or planning a cozy date night on the town, Napa Cafe can provide you an extraordinary evening. We have five dining rooms, including our private wine cellar, our Jan's room for two guests, and the Eleanor room for parties up to 60. Sit back, relax, and celebrate. Leave the cooking to us. Come see me at Napa Cafe, 5101 Sanderland Avenue. We're open Wednesday through Saturday for dinner starting at 5 o'clock. We also offer curbside pickup from our full menu. For details on our stay-in, dine-out menu, or reservations, visit our website at NapaCafe.com. We can't wait to serve you.
Come join in and celebrate 28 years of Napa Cafe in 2026.
So you need to sell your house? I have the solution. Call 901-406-1101. That's 901-406-1101. Call my buddy Bill and I buy houses, any house, any area, as is. It's literally as simple as that. Just pick up.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning
on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Well, this just in. Pete Thamel reporting that a judge in district court in Lubbock, Texas, think about it, home of the Texas Tech Red Raiders, has granted the injunction requested by Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby. He's set to be eligible for the 2026 season. Now, what are there other hoops he has to jump through? Again, a guy who bet on college football, bet on his team when he was at Indiana.
Well, yeah, I mean, they could still go. This is just an injunction. I mean, Betty Yacko, for instance, got an injunction, and then they went to court, and he lost, and it was that he became ineligible again. I assume that the NCAA will take this to court. Now, I don't know what exactly the time frame on all that.
That's
would be.
What I want to know.
The injunction, he will be suspended for the first two games, it says, according to this. But the judge, I guess, here says that this court finds that applicant has demonstrated that he will suffer a probable, imminent, and irreparable injury if this court does not issue this temporary injunction because he will be unable to participate as a member of Texas Tech University's 2026 football team.
Wait, an injury? What?
That's just a...
I know, but it's horrible terminology. But how does it hurt him financially when he will be in the NFL?
So this again goes to like the people, and I get it. I get where people want to criticize the NCAA a lot, but again, what is the NCAA supposed to do? Like this seems like the most basic of rules there is. It's in every damn sport. You can't bet on your team, and this guy's out there placing bets on his team, and there's a judge who says, no, can't take that away from, can't take the right, the ability to play football away from him. So now, this rule, if he ends up playing this season, now you can bet on your own team. You just claim that you had an addiction and all's good in the world because, hey, a lot of the guy was able to play. Why can't I play? I don't know. Like, I just don't know what the NCAA is supposed to do when literally, like, seemingly the most basic rule that there should be that should never be debated. The guy's gotten to play 3 years of college football that he should have never been able to play. And now we're granting him a fourth year because, oh, goodness gracious, how dare he have to actually pay any penalty for breaking all of these rules?
Yes, and you hit it on the head. I mean, this is what they're arguing about with Congress getting involved to have a set of rules. When Betty Yacko, when the injunction was granted, How long was it from that point until the NCAA got involved with the court case and then Bediako was ruled ineligible? Do you know how long that was?
Well, he ended up playing, what, like five games?
He played five games. The thing is, the supplemental draft in the NFL will be in July. We're already in June. So how quickly... My point is this. Does he turn around and the NCAA now will certainly take him to court, a different court, out of Lubbock, and fight this? And how about if it doesn't happen until after the supplemental draft, he ends up losing in court to the NCAA. Not only does he not play in 2026 in college, he doesn't play in the NFL. Or at least be on a team in the NFL. And he gets nothing as opposed to either the $5 million or whatever it is that supposedly Texas Tech paid to bring him in through the portal, or whatever he would get in the draft. And I was reading a lot about him on vacation, that he is projected to be a supplemental draft pick late first, early second. So that'd be pretty good money. Could he actually box himself out of not getting any money in 2026?
I mean, I guess, yeah, again, I don't know exactly how it all will work as far as what the NCAA does. I don't know what the timeline would be. I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, Bediako, let's see, when was the original?
By the way, I completely agree with you 100%. I mean, and we keep saying, what precedent does this set? Pandora's box is wide open. Yeah, well, that's been happening since day one, once we went to RevShare, NIL. And there's, again, I have no problem with RevShare. I have no problem with NIL. But it's ridiculous when you turn around, you go to a judge that's in your jurisdiction, and some judges have recluse themselves from hearing certain issues where they are affected personally because of their ties to the university, or maybe perhaps even the athlete. But for the most part, they have heard these cases and have ruled favorably toward the athlete. This is not the athlete being denied a chance to make money. This is an athlete that went completely against the rules that are set forth in playing as a collegiate athlete, about betting, about gambling on your own team, which he did. He was redshirted that year, but he was still a member of the team.
Yeah, so Bediako, it was like January 21st, I believe, that he got the original thing, and then it was February 10th.
Okay, so that's pretty quick. That's 3 weeks?
But the one thing, like, I don't know, because, like, his, they say it was a temporary restraining order. I don't know if that's different than an injunction. I don't know what the legal terms mean as far as that is concerned. So I don't know if this is if this is different in that way that would make it different for the NCAA. I have no idea.
Sorry, but it's a mess.
I mean, at the very least, the NCAA could appeal. I mean, it would be able to appeal at the very least to a higher court.
Yes, but how long, again, does that appeal go? I don't get it. I don't understand. I understand him fighting tooth and nail, but I just don't understand what these judges are looking at. He's not being denied a chance to make a living. He would be picked in the supplemental draft. He is going against the cardinal. It's a cardinal sin. He's going against the rule. Look, Pete Rose, he knew all about that stuff, right? And he paid the price at its fullest extent. You're telling me this guy's going to be back on the field? Yeah, that's what sours people about. That's one of the examples of what sours people about sports, but collegiate sports today. Bring it to a judge in our jurisdiction with ties to Lubbock. Yeah, he's going to give us a favorable ruling.
Yeah, like Ross Dellinger says, the NCAA is almost certain to appeal the decision. So I guess the NCAA has not said one way or another. Again, I would assume like that, as I said, I would think that you 100% would, because you're trying to at least have some sanity and protect this rule. So I guess from Sorsby's point of view would be, if they appeal and it drags on and he misses out on the supplemental draft, that's the risk he's taking. If he wants to wait it out, not enter a supplemental draft, and he ends up losing in the appeal, then yeah, then he's screwed. He's not going to be
paid either way.
I guess he would have to wait till next year's NFL draft.
Right.
And I guess he could always, if he doesn't think he's going to win on the appeal or whatever, then I guess he could still just say, all right, I'm going to go ahead and enter the supplemental draft.
I can't imagine, you know, Texas Tech's going to say, okay, the NCAA won their case, you're ruled ineligible, keep the $5 million. No. He's not getting that money, and he's not going to the draft because he will have passed the supplemental draft, and we'd have to wait till next April.
Pete Nakos says that he has reached out to the NCAA for comment, but they have not. He has not gotten anything from them. But other than that, he just says, and again, this isn't for them, but he, as he said, like, just to get everybody, that the appeal is likely.
Okay. All right. Back to the NBA, back to the Grizzlies. So, again, as I said in hour number one, a lot of crap out there that is fiction. And anything that you read where it says the Grizzlies have indicated, the Grizzlies have said about this draft is BS. So when you read that some teams are interested in moving up, although that's a blanketed statement and anybody could say that, but I'm sure there's truth to that, that the Grizzlies have been contacted. I'm sure there's truth to that, but again, that's a guess. Nobody out there, especially some of these, I don't even know what they are, you know, 500 followers, 900 followers. This one is Clutch Points NBA, never heard of it. But, yeah, I can imagine that the Grizzlies have been contacted. And they say the interest in Boozer is growing and Memphis may be holding one of the draft's most valuable assets. I agree with that. But they label it the Cam Boozer sweepstakes. If Cam Boozer is that valuable, then why isn't his name popping up for one or two? And that's why I say I don't think there's a guarantee that the Grizzlies are going to have even Cam Boozer available at three. And wouldn't those teams be reaching out to Washington and Utah unless they're going to roll the dice and think that, well, absolutely, Washington's taking DeBonsa and Utah's taking Peterson. And that may very well be the case. That's the consensus. I'm looking at mocks right now. The consensus is exactly that. But if you think Boozer is the guy, then you got to be reaching out to the top three teams, in my opinion. So, yeah, the Grizzlies hold an important asset, but it's no guarantee that it's Boozer. I think it will come down to Boozer, Wilson, and I think they'll take Boozer. But there's just some weird feeling. I'm thinking, he deserves all the accolades he's getting, Cam Boozer, and all the positivity. But with Peterson, he may be the best of the bunch. He may end up being the best player in this draft. You're still rolling the dice a little bit. DeBonsa, who I think is the best player in the draft, maybe not so much rolling the dice, but Boozer is one that everybody thinks they know what you're getting. You're getting this solid guy who's going to be close to, if not double-double every night, professionalism from day one, but doesn't have the ceiling that the other guys have. So what are you looking at when you're a team? You're looking at best player available. You're also playing. You got to be looking at some point of need, maybe not in the top few picks, but you certainly got to look at need at some point. Unless you're the Minnesota Timberwolves from several years back where they took like 3 point guards. But as far as the Grizzlies they're going to entertain those calls, but the Grizzlies moving out of three, that's nonsense.
I would agree. I would be shocked. If anybody, again, if any of the top four teams were to trade down out of the top four, I would be shocked.
Yeah.
I just don't. I do not see that happen. Any of those teams where they are as far as their timelines are concerned and the ability to get one of these top guys, I just can't imagine any one of them would be willing to trade out of there really for any price. I mean, obviously there's always a price. I don't see it getting to a price where any one of them would trade out of the top four for this year.
The one guy who's, well, one of the guys that's really intriguing to me, that, like, if you look at a mock, you could see him 10, 11, and I saw him the other day, he was 5. And that's Nate Amet from Tennessee. I don't know.
There's going to be some teams that fall in love with him just because of the pure physical thing. Like, you look at that length, you look at the ability to shoot, everything else, you always figure, well, he's going to get stronger. We're going to put weight on him. He'll get stronger. And, there will be some other teams who will look at his, struggling to finish at the rim at a high level this year, and they'll be turned off. But again, others will say, well, that's just, he just got to get stronger. And again, we'll do that. That ain't a problem. But that, just the pure length and ability to shoot the basketball, is going to, you know, make a lot of teams fall in love with him.
This mock I'm looking at, which is NBADraft.net, and again, there's a million of them out there. To me, this just doesn't make any sense. But maybe if you go, like, best player available every time you're picking, because the Grizzlies will pick three times, but I don't see that. They have them taking three bigs. It would be Boozer at 3, Allen Graves at 16, 6'9", 225, power forward, and then with the 32nd pick, taking 6'11", 260-pound center Terrace Reed out of UConn. I wouldn't mind getting Reed at number 32. But if you get Boozer, I'm sorry, Need at some point, unless it's just a can't-miss guy, but I don't think there's a can't-miss guy at 16, that you would look more toward that guard position. I mean, a guy who I think is going to end up being a really good NBA player and stayed in the draft is Malik Thomas. And he's penciled to be late teens, maybe early 20s. If you go Boozer and a guy like Thomas is available, I mean, that's a guy I would look at. I know Cameron Carr is the hot name. He's 6'6". He's a shooting guard. No, that's a guy that I could see them. But Allen Graves, I don't see that at 6'9". If you go Boozer and then come back with a center and Reed. But I could see getting center help. And that's why I think right now the Grizzlies, unless they're offered something that just absolutely blows them away, I think they're in a great position to get top-level talent and fill needs at the same time, if that's the direction they go in.
Yeah, and again, I still don't believe the Grizzlies will pick at 3, 16, and 32.
What are you thinking?
I think
they keep 3.
They'll keep 3, and again, Zach Kleiman generally finds guys he wants and targets them and figures out a way to get them.
If they move up.
And I don't think they want to draft 3 guys anyway.
Okay. If they move up, it's for a point guard. Would you agree?
I mean, I think point guard, and there's a good chance, but there may just be somebody out there that they really like. And again, when he has somebody that he targets, he figures out generally a way to go get them.
I love Acuff. I really love Acuff, but you're not going to use 3 on Acuff. It's one of the 4 that we talked about. But that's a guy I think has star potential. And right now he's penciling in the mock I was looking at, number 5. The first of those guards to be picked. But again, as we talked about, we have no idea who's been in to see the Grizzlies, who they've worked out, whether or not some of those guys even work out. Guys penciled for late first, early second, or even just second round, or maybe not even guys that are in the mocks, they're doing full workouts. Those top guys, I don't know what they're doing when they go visit. Probably being shown the city.
Well, some of these guys too, like they'll do a workout somewhere where the teams all can come watch them there. Some of the guys won't really go from team to team necessarily. Their agency will put on a workout with multiple guys, and teams can come watch that workout or whatever. Obviously, they're still going to do some probably team visits, but there will be a lot of it where it's just, hey, this is the date we're doing this wherever, and you could come watch. And then all the teams are basically invited to that.
Yeah, and then, of course, another rumor that's out there, which is a bunch of BS, I'm sure, but it's a, yeah, Boozer and his agent, they're trying to throw out a lot of stuff because they don't want the grid. He doesn't want to go to Memphis. He doesn't want to go to Memphis, doesn't want to play for Memphis. Always, there's always something like that. Always something that you hear about this athlete doesn't want to go to Memphis. They don't want to be traded to Memphis. Yeah, I'm sure there are some, but I mean that's the one of the narratives that's out there, which I can't sit here and say it's false. It's not, you know, it's inaccurate, but I find it hard to believe. I would think right now, you know, you're pretty happy where you're going. We don't hear too much in the NBA. We hear it a lot in the NFL, but not too much in the NBA. One other thing before we take the break. This is going back to the Sorsby ruling. Scott Van Pelt from ESPN, fellow Terp. There really aren't any rules. You just go to court. If it fails, you go to court again until a judge says you're all set. Want a seventh year? Sure. Broke rules? It's fine. There aren't any rules. And that's what everybody, I think for the most part, is agreeing with. And then with the Congress getting involved, it's like, okay, it makes sense. But now when you start to flirt with the money of the big boys, they say, uh-uh. So what is more important? To have just chaos, no rules, or the money? And it's been proven time in, time again, that it's the money.
And by the way, Ian Rapoport pointed out that with this ruling, he's not even eligible for the supplemental draft. So he can't be like, oh, in case I lose later, I'm going to enter supplemental draft. He's not eligible because he's got college eligibility remaining now. He is not even eligible to go to the supplemental draft.
So he's past the deadline?
No, he can't go. You can't be in the supplemental draft. You can't just declare with eligibility, college eligibility remaining. There has to be a special circumstance. You have to basically apply and say, here's my special circumstance why I need to be in the supplemental draft.
Yep.
I've had my college eligibility taken away from me, and so I want to be in the supplemental draft.
So it's like
that ruling coming down, he's been granted his eligibility.
Yeah, he's eligible to play in college football again, so he cannot be in the supplemental draft.
But how about if the next court case, which will be the NCAA,
eliminates it again,
then he has no eligibility.
That's before the supplemental draft, then he'd be eligible for the supplemental draft.
That's what we've been saying. He's saying nothing different. Our whole point is, how quickly?
Well, I actually did say something different. I said he could say, "What? I'm not confident that I'm going to win in the next round." So just to be safe, I'm going to go to supplemental draft. He can't do that. He is not eligible for the supplemental draft as long as he is until another ruling happens saying he's not eligible.
I would bet he's in with 2 feet right now rolling with this thing.
Of course.
Yeah, because you're
right. He has to be.
But what I'm saying is the NCAA, we'll see how quickly they act. They will win when they go up against him, wherever that is, and in front of whatever judge it is. And the question is, will there be time between that and the supplemental draft?
Right.
That's the big question, the timing now of everything.
Folks, Fleet Feet, that's the place to go to get all your running gear. You want to go get shoes that are just right for you, go see the folks at either one of the two locations of Fleet Feet. They'll take care of you. They take a look at the way you run, the way you walk, fit you with shoes that are perfect for you, plus all your other gear, everything else you need. They've got you taken care of, even if it's maybe advice about getting started running or any of that type of stuff. They've got group runs as well that they do that you can get involved with. It's just all about the runners. It's all about the running community. That's what it's about at Fleet Feet. You could go see them in the Laurelwood Shopping Center in East Memphis, or you could go out to Collierville, Poplar, Newston, Levy, next door to the Hueys. Go see the folks at Fleet Feet.
I'll read you the NCAA's statement on the Sorsby ruling when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM, here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:51 is the time. So here's the NCAA statement on the Sorsby ruling. The NCAA strongly disagrees with the court's ruling in Sorsby's case and is deeply concerned about the damaging, far-reaching, and broadly destabilizing ramifications of this outcome, which undermines and corrupts the integrity of sports. The NCAA is committed to supporting student-athlete mental health, but must continue to aggressively defend against actions that defraud college athletics and threaten competitive integrity, such as betting on one's own sport. They're saying that this absolutely is not a mental situation. He doesn't have a disease, a gambling disease. He knew the rule. He broke the rule. He's not eligible. That's the way it should be. And that's probably part of their defense when they fight it in court.
Somebody posted, forget being eligible. He probably just, he had a $100,000 bet on Kalshi that he would win the injunction. The NCAA deserves a lot of criticism on things, but I don't know what people want them to do anymore. They cannot, I guess other, the only thing they could possibly do is try and find better lawyers. I don't know. But if you can't even, if this rule is not enforceable, I don't know what you're supposed to do from the NCAA's perspective. There's just, other than throw your hands up and say, we give up. And until somebody else can show us a better route, then we're done. I mean, we're tired. I would be tired of going to court and losing. I would get a little tired. Like, listen, why are we going to do this? Why are we going to say no to this? They'll take us to court. You know what's going to happen? We're going to lose.
You know what? Figure out the, and what is the initials again of the Congress, the Congressional Bipartisan Bill?
It's the Protect College Sports Act.
Protect College Sports Act. Get that fixed. Because I don't think anybody has a big problem right now with the way we are in collegiate sports, that the SEC and the Big Ten are dominant financially. They should be. Right? They should be. They have the schools, the teams where most eyes are watching in those respective sports, the big two. Men's basketball, college football. Fix that. Rectify that situation with them. Make them where they are the dominant. I don't know how you do it, but do that. And then I think everything else is fine for the most part. And then approve it. Get that bill passed and now have rules and regulations. But
those will be challenged in court too.
But if you have congressional government will trump state. So it would take away from all these little jurisdictions and throwing their judges who are tainted certainly by their allegiance to the schools. I mean, we've seen it time and time again in the last couple of years. Yeah, bring it to the Lubbock. Again, a couple of judges with integrity have reclused themselves. Other than that, they do it. Oh, yeah. They give the hearing, and then they'll say, hey, we'll see you on Saturday on September 8th at the game in your suite. But they're taking advantage of the situation now because they can. And so the NCAA has to turn around, spend more money on attorneys to now fight again this. It's not frivolous, but just stupid. It's just stupid. I mean, a guy blatantly broke the biggest rule of gambling on his own team and now is going to be eligible to play? As Van Pelt said, yeah, give every, this guy wants a seventh year, this woman wants an eighth year, just give it to him. Just keep it going. 45-year-olds playing in college, fine, no problem. It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Like I said, they have to challenge every single one of these rulings, spend money, hire the attorneys. Of course, they have their own attorneys, but hire them, pay them, and then win the case, because they'll win the case. But they have to waste their time with this situation is ridiculous. It's going to do it for us today. I want to thank Adam Zagoria for joining us. It's going to be maddening in New York tonight with the Knicks and the Spurs, game number 3 of the NBA Finals. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about it bright and early, starting at 7 a.m. Also tomorrow on the show, some interesting guests. We got the Basketball Hall of Famer Nancy Lieberman joining us on the program, former great collegiate star and professional, and now one of the coaches in the Big Three. Ali Sadiq's going to join us, comedian Ali Sadiq, who will be in Memphis, and also Mickey Barker with our golf segment. But pinch hitting for Mickey tomorrow is our friend Sean McFetridge from Galloway Golf Course. That's all coming up tomorrow, starting bright and early at 7 a.m. Wolo and Friends on Sports 56 is coming up next. Landon Schmidt in for Wolo. For Eli, Jay Ham, I'm Greg Gaston. Have a great day, everybody.
Be sure to download our Hub 901 app for instant access to Sports 56 and all the Flynn broadcasting stations from anywhere. Go to the App Store and get the Hub 901 app today.
Unlock your